Admission to the sessions is by registration, and that if you have not registered yet, you may do that in the lobby. It is with great pleasure that I would like to introduce to you this morning our speaker, Robert Fillerup, and his respondent, Michael Lyon. Robert Fillerup graduated from BYU Law School with the charter class of 1976. For several years, he had his own law practice until he became the founder and president of CodeCo, a firm which publishes a simplified form of Utah code and statutes. His work extends into from Utah, Arizona, Idaho, and Nevada. Robert has been on the National Advisory Board of Sunstone since 1983. He has delivered papers on topics that include Mormonism and magic, canes and their magical healing power, the burials of Joseph and Hiram Smith, and last year, near-death experiences. This morning, we are pleased to hear him discuss the Joseph Smith alphabet and grammar re-examined. The respondent to Robert's paper will be Michael Lyon. Michael is a commercial artist specializing in museum exhibits. He has worked on the Ramsey II exhibit in Denver and Boston, recreating various aspects of Egyptian culture. He is a BYU graduate in fine arts and Asian studies. He took classes in Middle Egyptian, focusing on the pictorial aspects. He continues to be interested in the religious relationship between all religions and their art. It was with great pleasure that I now give you Robert Fillerup.
Not too fond of this idea here.
Bob, you pinned it on your lower lip.
Hello, Tom. I knew there'd be one smart aleck in this audience. Today, if I can find my paper, we're going to be talking about the... Would you hand me that copy that you have? And there's one for you right down there. Thank you, Daniel. Joseph Smith's Egyptian Alphabet and Grammar. Although Joseph Smith's Egyptian alphabet and grammar became widely available for the first time in 1966, that's 25 years ago, when it was printed by the Tanners, it has received little scrutiny. As early as 1968, Dr. Hugh Nibley began suggesting that the alphabet and grammar was not directly associated with Joseph Smith, but was either a preliminary study of some sort, or else was the result of an aborted effort, end of quote, by his associates to duplicate his translation efforts. For example, in an article in BYU Studies in 1969, Nibley states, the A and G, and I'll be using that terminology probably throughout this presentation, A and G, meaning alphabet and grammar, and other papers supposedly based on the Egyptian texts of the Book of Abraham are almost entirely filled with stuff that has no relationship to the Book of Abraham as we have it, end of quote. And in his book, Abraham in Egypt, published in 1981, he suggested, quote, the Book of Abraham could not have come from that papyrus called the Book of Breathings, nor could it possibly be the product of the clumsy and quickly abandoned gropings of the so-called alphabet and grammar. It is not clear to me why Dr. Nibley has diverted attention away from the alphabet and grammar, so consistently over the years. Perhaps it is because he simply did not spend enough time with the A and G to see any connection. In any event, several years ago, I began carefully re-examining the alphabet and grammar, inputting it into a computer, sorting it, comparing it, etc. And today I'm going to share some of those discoveries that I and some others, like Joe Sampson, for example, have made during this re-examination. From this re-examination, I believe that we can make the following conclusions. One, the documents that constitute the alphabet and grammar should rightfully bear the title Joseph Smith's Egyptian Alphabet and Grammar. And that is why I've titled this presentation as such. Historical as well as internal evidence demonstrates to me that Joseph Smith was the instigator and director of the preparation of these documents. Two, the alphabet and grammar is directly connected with facsimile number one and the Book of Breathings or the Sensen papyrus. I'll be using the term Sensen from now on because it's a shorter way of saying it. Three, the alphabet and grammar is directly connected with the preparation of the original manuscripts of the Book of Abraham. Four, using information contained in the alphabet and grammar, it is possible to demonstrate one possible way that the Book of Abraham was derived from the Sensen papyrus. And five, the alphabet and grammar suggests an alternative method of interpreting the Egyptian language. Now we need to examine some of the historical background concerning the Egyptian materials. The story of how Joseph Smith came into possession of the Egyptian mummies and papyri in July of 1835 is generally known to all of you. As stated in the history of the church, on the 3rd of July, this is 1835, Michael H. Chandler came to Kirtland to exhibit some Egyptian mummies. There were four human figures, together with some two or more rolls of papyrus covered with hieroglyphic figures and devices. As Mr. Chandler had been told that I could translate them, he brought me some of the characters, and I gave him the interpretation. And like a gentleman, he gave me the following certificate. And in the history of the church is a little certificate from Chandler. And then at the end of the entries in the history of the church for July of 1835, we find the following statement. The remainder of this month, I was continually engaged in translating an alphabet to the Book of Abraham and arranging a grammar of the Egyptian language as practiced by the ancients. While there are numerous entries in the history of the church, which are taken from Joseph Smith's diary, concerning the exhibition of the mummies and papyri to returning elders, visiting dignitaries, etc., the following are the entries for the remainder of 1835, which I believe are related to the alphabet and grammar. I just like to read these quickly. October 1st, 1835, this afternoon labored on the Egyptian alphabet in company with brothers O. Cowdery and W.W. Phelps. The system of astronomy was unfolded. Just as a footnote, that entry was greatly expanded in the history of the church. But I prefer the entry out of Joseph's diary. October 8, 1835, as a note, the handwriting in Joseph's diary changes from that of Frederick G. Williams to Warren Parrish. And I'll explain why that's important in a while. And then Thursday, the 29th of October, so the handwriting changes on October 8th. Thursday, the 29th of October, we have this entry in Joseph Smith's diary, written in Warren Parrish's handwriting, that says, Brother W. Parrish, commence writing for me. It's possible that Parrish commenced on October 29th, but went back and recreated the events from October 8th down to the 29th. Or it's possible that this entry means he commenced writing for me in some other document. In any event, Parrish enters the scene in October of 1835. Tuesday, the 17th of November, 1835, he says, I exhibited the alphabet of the ancient records to Mr. Holmes and some others. Holmes was a visiting inquirer. Tuesday, the 24th of November, 1835, at home, spent the forenoon instructing those that called to inquire concerning the things of God in the last days. In the afternoon, love to have a videotape of that. In the afternoon, we translated some of the Egyptian records. And then several entries the next day. Spent the day in translating. Next day, at home, we spent the day in transcribing Egyptian characters from the papyrus. I am severely afflicted with a cold. In fact, because of that cold, he quit for about a week. And then in December, he says, returned home, Elder McClellan, Elder B. Young, and Elder Jared Carter, called and paid me a visit with which I was much gratified. I exhibited and explained the Egyptian records to them and explained many things to them concerning the dealings of God with the ancients and the formation of the planetary. They seemed much pleased with the interview. While these end to be somewhat unconnected, they are all relevant. But first, we must take a look at this, quote, as Joseph called it, alphabet to the Book of Abraham and grammar of the Egyptian language as practiced by the ancients. Actually, there are three separate sets of documents we need to examine. The first are the actual papyri as obtained by Joseph Smith. The second set of documents are the Egyptian papers, which were created in Kirtland from studying the papyri, papyri, whatever pronounced, I'll say papyri. And third, there are the original manuscripts of the Book of Abraham. Photos of the papyri have been published. In several places. I think some of the best are in the improvement era for January of 1968, where most of the papyri owned by the church and that had been recently acquired from the museum in New York were published in full color. Black and white copies have been around for a long time, too. Two of these papyri are relevant to our discussion today. That being facsimile number one, which was acquired from the museum, and the so-called Sensen papyrus, or Book of Breathings. Have some slides of those, Joe, if you want to flip that on. And I misplaced my slide projector somewhere, loaned it to a friend, and so 2 days ago I bought this one from DI for $9. So if it doesn't work, it's the fault of DI. This, of course, is facsimile number one. Just as a side note here, don't have a pointer, but if any of you have your Book of Abraham or if you want to remember this, there's lots of hieroglyphic or possibly hieratic writing in the margins that was cropped off when facsimile number one was actually published. So until this papyrus was rediscovered, we really didn't have much of an idea that that existed. Okay, next slide, Joe. And that's the Sensen papyrus, or the Book of Breathings. This papyrus was the subject, essentially, of Hugh Nibley's book, The Message of the Joseph Smith Papyrus. I think it's papyrus, no, papyri, the Egyptian endowment book. Next, Joe. And then, I think it was Klaus Baer, back in 19, maybe as a Tanner, somebody figured out that facsimile number one at one time had been attached right to the Book of Breathings or the Sensen papyrus. Mike, would you hand me that little poster there? That we'll just keep this up here so I can use it. But you can see from the cut on the backing papers and also from the diagram on the back of these were pasted up on some old or apparently no longer needed maps and plat maps and so forth, and so you can match up the lines on the back and show that these two are actually one part of a roll at one time. You also notice that there's some damage in the facsimile number one and in the Sensen papyrus. A few years ago, I made up a little overlay of this, and as I started fiddling with this, I came to realize that at one time, this obviously was a part of a long roll, and so if you roll this up carefully, about an inch in diameter, you can see that these holes match up exactly, and that somewhere along the line, you can see as you roll this together that these little holes come around, if I can do this right. Well, apparently I can't do it right. We'll try it a little tighter. It was rolled very tightly. And the little, you see that? These little holes match up as you wrap this around. I'm not doing a good job, but as you roll that carefully, the holes match. Also, as you know, facsimile number two, as drawn, maybe you don't know, as drawn, we don't have facsimile number two in the original form. We have a drawing that exists in the Church Historical Department. It shows that it at one time, it shows incomplete. And, of course, many of you know that the part that was missing here was filled in when it was printed in Nauvoo with some hieratic off of the Sensen papyrus and some other things. If you flip this over, this hole matches also the holes in here. And it's my theory that maybe at one time, facsimile number two may have been rolled up in the same roll. And then somewhere along the line, they got damaged. I'm going to demonstrate today that in the alphabet and grammar, the characters that would have appeared in the Sensen papyrus are actually in the alphabet and grammar. So it shows that they had all of these characters at one time and that the damage occurred after the preparation of the alphabet and grammar. It's also possible that facsimile number 2 is literally drawn right on the back of facsimile number 1 and maybe pasted right down on the backing sheet. So if somebody in the audience wants to go up and get permission to tear off facsimile number 1 off of its backing sheet, I'm sure they'd let you do that. You may find facsimile number 2. The second group that we have to deal with of papers, as I said, are the Egyptian papers that were actually created in Nauvoo from the workings with the papyrus. Hugh Nibley, give me the next slide, Joe. Hugh Nibley produced a list of these. I was afraid of that, so I made a handout. Let's see. Tom, you smarted off. You have to come up and pass this handout. Would you get that first down to the first blue sheet? It's a handout of, in fact, you may want to divide it up. Rich, you want to help him, somebody help pass these out quickly. While they're doing that, this is a list that Nibley prepared and was published in his BYU Studies article in the summer of 1971. For those who may eventually listen to this on a tape, or for those in the audience who want to maybe review this eventually, all of the photographs and slides that I'm using today were taken out of this article in the BYU Studies for two reasons. One, they were nice, good prints, and the other one is that it's readily available, and for those who want to review, you'll have a source. Somewhere in there is his chart. Summer 1971, volume 11, number 4. Egyptian MSS number 1. These are classified as Egyptian manuscripts in the historical department. I've recreated each of these. I've bound mine so that they're more convenient to work with, but manuscript number 1 is entitled The Grammar and Alphabet of the Egyptian Language. It's in the handwriting of Phelps and Warren Parrish. Remember, we dealt with Warren Parrish for a few minutes. Egyptian MS number 2 is entitled Egyptian Counting. It's in the handwriting of Phelps. Very small document, just a couple of pages. This one, this document, MS number 1, is the one that's traditionally referred to as the alphabet and grammar because the very first thing you find in it says grammar and alphabet of the Egyptian language. MS number 3 in the handwriting of W.W. Phelps. Somewhere along the line in past years, somebody took all these manuscripts and assigned a letter to them, except for the bound book, MS number 1, which isn't a bound book. The rest seem to be loose pages. Somebody, I think about in the 1920s, went through and assigned an alphabetic letter, A through X. Well, somebody later decided that they would try to rearrange these into what they, I think, perceived as the groupings. And so now we have these manuscripts. Manuscript number 3 is composed of pages C, D, E, and F. That's not on Nibley's list if you want to jot these pages down. That's in the handwriting of Phelps. MS number 4 is composed of pages B, T, U, V, and W. And this is in the handwriting almost entirely of Joseph Smith. MS number 5 is composed of pages A, X, I, and J. Makes perfectly good sense. And it's in the handwriting of Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery. And then the rest of those I'm not really going to deal with because they don't really have much to do with the alphabet and grammar. Miscellaneous, I've got some of those. The valuable discovery ones, some of you are familiar with. They really aren't important to our study today. Those are the Egyptian papers that were created in Pertland. We're going to come back to those in a minute. Next, we need to deal with the original manuscripts of the Book of Abraham. There are 4 of those, or maybe 5. Actually, there are 4 separate manuscripts. And then the facsimile number 2 reproduction. Manuscript number 1, this was purchased by Wilford Wood in the early 1940s from Louis Biedemann. And it is in the handwriting of W.W. Phelps and Warren Parrish. And it includes Book of Abraham, verse 1, chapter 1, verse 1, through chapter 2, verse 18. MS number 2 of the original Book of Abraham. MS number 2 of the Book of Abraham manuscripts. Let me just show you number 1 for fun. I've got some slides of this, and we'll deal with that in a minute. But this is basically how the manuscripts of the Book of Abraham look. You've got these characters in the margin, and then you have the English wording that matches almost identically our Book of Abraham in, of course, the body of the manuscript. Same thing with this one, MS number 2. You'll see that there are characters in the margin, and then we have the English wording. MS number 3 is entirely in the handwriting of Warren Parrish. Starts MS number 2 starts at Book of Abraham, chapter 1, verse 4, and goes to chapter 2, verse 6. This one starts at chapter 1, verse 4, and goes to chapter 2, verse 2. Then we have manuscript number 4, which is entirely in the handwriting of Willard Richards, which means it must have been prepared in Nauvoo. And it has no characters in the margin. And it's chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 26. I know of no other manuscripts. Well, let me deal with this one. This one is facsimile number 2. As I was explaining, it's a drawing that exists, done with a compass and apparently a tracing or a drawing of the facsimile number 2 as it existed in Nauvoo with the explanations written in the handwriting of Willard Richards. When the woodcut was made by Headlock, either he or somebody else apparently told him to fill in additional material to make it complete as it was published. And then there's this letter that is really not relevant. You can read the very bottom item on your list. So today we're going to deal with these essentially 5 manuscripts, Egyptian manuscripts, and 3 of the 4 manuscripts of the Book of Abraham. When I examined these manuscripts, the Egyptian papers, I realized that there were several duplicate words, duplicate concepts, duplicate signs, variations and definitions of the same word. Talks about degrees, first part of the first degree, second up to the second part of the fifth degree. And I said, this suggests that we ought to use a computer, and so that's exactly what I did. I input each word out of all of these manuscripts. I standardized the spelling and then sorted the compilation. Tom, you're up again, another handout. You're going to get punished today for... Yeah, two different... Oh. And the next one, there are 2 different handouts. Let me make sure we're on track.
Short on copies.
Well, I need 60, so some of you who are married have to share, and some of you are not are going to have to share anyway. And... Yeah, you should each get 4 pages. Now, what we may be able to do is give somebody pages 1 and 2 and somebody else 3 and 4, and that'll guarantee that you remain confused. Here's some more I need passed out. Who wants to be a pass? Who wants?
Page 2. What'd you pass out over there, 2?
Could get confusing. There's 3s and 4s. My compilation is some 30 pages long, or 29 or something like that. I'm giving you the first 4 pages. These pages that I'm giving you are copies of my computer analysis.
Another thing we've done is some of these people have friends that make copies for somebody else. We'll be up here.
I guess it's good that somebody, you always underestimate your popularity. I can imagine that more than 60 people would be interested in this subject. The characters that appear and the definitions that you have on page 1 follow exactly in the order of manuscript number 1. For example, the very first one you should be seeing says, this character is called Zakion Hayash, or Chalcedon Hayash, etc., and then it has the definition. I have scanned in my computer the graphic image that appears in the margin of the alphabet and grammar, but of course I have the typescript. I relied heavily upon Gerald Tanner's typescript when he initially did it. And then I found that there were a lot of errors and problems in that when I finally did my compilation. And now that we're confusing everybody, I think I have two more handouts. Yes. Tom's already up. He knows he's. There's a page 6 and a page 5. This is of the alphabetic sort that I made based upon the standardized spelling. So you should get a page 5 with a circle around it and a page 6. Don't get confused. I didn't realize this till after I'd done all these, that I'm giving you pages 1 through 4 of the non-alphabetic and pages of the alphabetic. You might think those go in order, but in fact they're not related. So pages 5 and 6. And this is the alphabetized sort after I input all of this, so I can sort sort all the words out and say, gee, this word appears in all these different manuscripts and has all these various meanings. As you look across the top of this compilation, you'll see that I give you the page, I give you a standardized spelling, then the page in the original manuscripts. Remember that I told you several of them are lettered? Then I give you the degree that it's in, because all of these manuscripts are in degrees and parts. And then I give you the part, if there is one. And then the graphic, and then the graphic image, and then the definition.
Can you tell us what you mean by degrees and parts?
I didn't make that up. It's in the original manuscripts. They divided these things into degrees and parts. And so when you look in the original manuscript, for example, you have second part of the fifth degree. As you turn a few pages, you have the second part of the first degree. And that's the way they did it. You also have, in the first degree on one of these manuscripts, you have 5 different parts. So there are degrees and parts. We'll get to those in a minute, and maybe I'll show you what I think that means. I don't want you to wad these handouts up and throw them away just yet, because we're going to use them again in a minute. Okay, I need slide number 5, Joe. And we're going to go back to these original manuscripts. Can you focus that in a little bit? Sorry for all this confusion on pages, but... Okay. Let me see if I have this. Oh, I didn't realize this would be such a circus. I should have collated all of these. And because I didn't, I have another handout, which is this page. And the reason I want to hand this one out to you is this is page B of manuscript number 4. It's entirely in the handwriting of Joseph Smith. Let me see that. Some of you who are my close, dear friends, both of you, why don't you give up your copies and give them to somebody who doesn't have any if they desperately need them? And I'll make sure that I get even with you later. Okay, I'm going to make you quite... We're short of time. This is the original slide of a page out of one of these original Egyptian manuscripts. This happened to be manuscript number 4. This is entirely in the handwriting of Joseph Smith. You will see these definitions. You'll see a character written in the margin. See, this says second part 3. If you get your hand out, you'll see it. I'm down at the bottom here now. And then there's a character written. And then there's a definition. This looks like almost to me, or Amos. And then it's got the definition. And then you have Aleph. And then you have Albeth, and then you have Alkabeth and Alkobeth and so forth, and Baeth, Kabath, Ki. So you have a character, you have a word, and then you have a definition. And that's what I input into my computer. Okay, next slide, Joe. This is page T out of that same manuscript. And fortunately, I don't have a handout. So you're just going to have to look at the slide. Let me read Dr. Nibley's comment on this very page as he printed it in the BYU Studies article on page 367. His comment, the little note that you can barely read up there, says, "An Egyptian alphabet in the handwriting of Joseph Smith. So he acknowledges it, that this is in the handwriting of Joseph Smith. Here are his notes. One, that the Egyptian signs are arranged according to form, vertical, horizontal, diagonal, etc., meaning that they follow a pattern, which isn't entirely true, but that's what he says. That the explanations are systematic classifications of the hierarchy of royal power and its establishment in the land, of part one, and of heavenly power and its transfer to mankind, second part. What he fails to mention is on the next page, you get the third part, the fourth part, and the fifth part. He doesn't deal with those. He just deals with this page. That the text differs from that of W.W. Phelps, because that hit Phelps's is in a different degree, in a different part, that only 23 symbols are considered in each part, which is not totally correct, while the second part does not go beyond Aleph and Beth, which again is not true, because the next page, page U, goes beyond Aleph and Beth. That we here have a perfectly sane and rational approach to a problem. From this it will appear we have a perfectly sane and rational approach to the problem, that the approach is experimental and not authoritarian, and that it was abandoned in an early stage. And I totally disagree with all three of those conclusions. As dearly as I like Brother Nibley, I can't agree in this respect, because I think the evidence shows differently. Again, this MS number 4 is almost entirely in the handwriting of Joseph Smith. Let's go to the next slide, Joe. This is page C from manuscript number 3. Again, taken right out of Nibley's article, so you can refer to it. But it gives you a little sense that there's some different shapes and different characters and some variations. Again, Amos, Aleph, Albeth, Alkabeth, same idea. This is in the handwriting of W.W. Phelps. Want to dwell on this one just for a moment, because it's probably the clearer one. This may be a bad example. Let me see. Do I have the next page here, Joe? Solve that problem. I'm just going to have to state this. These characters in these early degrees come directly in order off of facsimile number 1. And so they start with this column, which is now lost, right above the beside the priest. There was a column of characters here. This is what was transcribed into the alphabet and grammar documents as the first degree. Then these characters over here were transcribed as the second degree. The next column's the third degree. The next column's the fourth. So we're moving left to right. So the first column is right above the priest. Then it goes second degree, third degree, fourth degree. And then you come back, and this becomes the fifth degree, which is the leftmost column immediately adjacent to the Sensen papyrus. And I could demonstrate it. I'm just running out of time, and I'll do that for anybody who wants to see that afterwards. But I can show you that these characters in the MS number 3, 4, and 5 come directly off of those columns with their corresponding definitions. For example, this is the character representing Kolob right there, and you can clearly see. And this is Vekhi Floesis, for example, and this is Ha'ohiup. I mean, these are all these characters, and you can find the definition. What they did is they expanded these. They dissected them, and so you get a character, and then you'll get variations of that. And I'm going to show you that by the next slide. Oh, I did have slides of this. I didn't have to. I'm going to show you this by a slide and by a handout, Tom. Yeah, I haven't seen Tom for however many years, and you're getting so punished today. His name's Tom Catherall for the tape recording, so it'll always be preserved for posterity. I was going to show you some slides of this third, fourth, and fifth degree material, but my DI projector may have died here. No, that's slide 8. I need slide 9. Okay. Here's my pointer, I see. If you look closely here, you can see, I hope. Did I do the wrong one? No, here we go. See this character right here, for example? See, I told you this was Kolob. See Kolob right there? That's this character right here. Then you get the next one down here, and then the next one, which is this character, and then you get this, the Ankh sign, which is the next one. You get the next character, which is this one. You can just follow those right on down and see that they come right off of these columns, or you can go backwards and go up. You got this character right up here. You see him up there, the uplifted hands, Hohaup. Then these are all pieces of this character, Katuain Triet, which is this next one right up here. You can just go up and follow those. Go through the next slide and we'll... Okay, this was the second degree. Remember, the first degree is over here. That was the second degree. Now, this is the third degree, the third part, or the third part of the first degree, depending on which manuscript you're looking at. Again, you can find these matching characters. See this one right here is this one. This botched up thing here is this one right here. Mike Lyon can tell you what all these are, but I'm not an Egyptologist, and I really haven't approached this from the Egyptologist point of view, because I don't think that's relevant to this study. Okay, next slide. Here we have the fifth degree, clear off on the margin. This one's important because you come down to this character. These are missing, but they appear right in here. And then you have this character, which is Zakayan Hish, or Kulsadan Hish. The next one is Abraom. These are the first two characters on the Book of Breathings, or the Sensen Papyrus. They are also the first two characters that appear in MS number 1, which is the page 1 of my computer printout that I passed out a few minutes ago. What's clear to me is they got down to here, realized that they were onto something different, and so switched over, and in a separate book started right here then giving the definitions of all of this material. And that became MS number 1. I'm convinced that the order of preparation of these documents is MS number 4 was the first one, of course. Then it goes MS number 3. MS number 2 is hard to date because it's the Egyptian counting. And then it went MS number 1. So they went 4, 3, I don't know where 2 comes in, and then 1. Okay, now the next slide, Joe. Remember I showed you that these were the first two characters that appear in MS number 1, which is the grammar, or excuse me, translation Book of Abraham. This is the actual Book of Abraham manuscript, and these are the very same two characters that first appear in the margin. And so you begin to see that there's some relation here. Can you get slide number 8 in there again, Joe? Or is that 8? No, I don't think it is. Put 8 in there if you can. It's not all that important. 8 is simply to show you a slide or a picture of the first page of MS number 1, which is, as I said, also the first page of my computer. Well, that's not it, but again, the same characters in the same order. Yeah, that's it. The grammar and alphabet. See, here we go again. These two characters, well, actually, there's that one, and then they begin to dissect it. And here's all of this grammar that we have about various degrees and parts and how you put this whole scheme together. I was going to walk you through this, but I'm just going to tell you this. I believe that this manuscript was prepared from the back to the front. I believe that that they actually prepared it just as they were reading the documents from right to left. And so even though the original manuscript is in a bound book, I've reached the conclusion that they started in the back, leaving blank pages to go back and fill in. There's 22 blank pages between the second part of the first degree and the third part of the first degree. Then there's another 22 blank pages between, and then 22 more blank pages. So they were going in segments of 22 pages clear to the front of the book. And I think the last thing that was written is the first thing that you find as you open the book. And I can show that by some of the changes that were made or the mistakes that were corrected. There are mistakes that they crossed out and corrected back here that aren't crossed out and corrected in the front of the book, which is really the back of the book. Makes perfectly good sense. Okay, now I need to go to the manuscripts, original manuscripts of the Book of Abraham. Slide 12, if you can find it, Joe. And you need to get your handout out, page 1, those of you who can find it. So it's the computer printout that says page 1. We're now going to create a Book of Abraham. A little presumptuous. Oh, yeah, we got time problems. Gee, I've got to hurry. Moving right along. What you see in the original manuscript is a character and then a definition. If you match those characters in the alphabet and grammar and the definitions, you begin to hear words that are exactly the same phrases and words that are in the book of Abraham. The language isn't exact, but it's close. For example, let's look at just the very first one. Zakion Hayash, you don't have it there because it's in a different degree, but in the first degree, land of the Chaldees. What does Abraham say in the book of Abraham? He says, in the land of the Chaldees, the next word is Beth, or Beth, which is a breakout or a dissection of the word of the character for Zikion Hayash. It says place of happiness, purity, etc. It refers to a residence. You have Beth Ka, which is the greatest place of happiness. I'm just reading these in order now, off of this very document you have. Exceeding, extending beyond, etc. Another larger place of residence. So what does Abraham say in the very first part of the book of Abraham? Opposite, or what does the original manuscript say opposite this character? In the land of the Chaldees, at the residence of my father, has to do with residence, I, Abraham, which is the next character, which is Chi Abram, I, Abraham, saw, you get iota, the very next one here is iota, which means to see, saw, seeing, or me, myself, so I saw, that it was needful for me to obtain what? Another place of residence. And then he says down here in verse 2, he says, I needed a place where there was greater happiness and peace and rest for me. What's the definition of Beth Ka? A place of more complete happiness, peace, and rest for man. And so you begin to see these correlations. I was going to show you a whole string of these, and I guess if you're interested, I'll have to do this afterwards. A whole string of those all the way down through, clear through verse 23. You can match up, out of the alphabet and grammar, the phrases and words such that they're very similar to that which appears in the book of Abraham. A couple of interesting ones is at verse 23 and 24. We have a character in the margin. Oh, gee, I have a slide and I lost track here, but we'll just... I can show you my book of Abraham. Here's the character, and it's got a little... looks like... well, there's a character. This character is on your handout, page 4, and it's called Iota Toes Zipzi. And if you look at that character on page 4 and find it, it matches identically the character opposite of verse 23 in the original manuscript. So if you got a page 4 and can find that, and it says this for the definition, the land of Egypt which was first discovered by a woman while underwater and afterwards settled by her sons, she being a daughter of Ham, any land overflown with water, a land seen when overflown by water, land overflown by the seasons, land enriched by da-da-da. Sounds like Egypt to me. That's what they're describing. Here it says, the land of Egypt being first discovered by a woman who was the daughter of Ham. When the woman discovered the land, it was underwater, who afterwards settled her sons in it. Almost the identical language out of the alphabet and grammar. The identical symbol. It's embellished and changed a little bit in the alphabet, or in the book of Abraham, but it's the very same language. This one's kind of a fun one because if you read it backwards, we have a word in the book of Abraham that doesn't appear in the alphabet and grammar, Egyptus. However, if you read Ziziptues very slowly backwards, Ziziptues is Egyptus. Ziziptues iota. Egyptus saw. Saw what? Saw the land of Egypt while it was underwater. So we get her name. Joe Sampson brought this to my attention. We get her name from just reading it backwards. Well, there's all kinds of fun stuff in here that needs to be worked over and researched. In my notes, I say, if there's time, do all of this. There's not time, so we're not doing all that. Some final observations. I got to do this very quickly. I need that chart over there. That blank pad. And I had a marker. Let me show you how I think the book of Abraham came about. It's like an anchor on my soul here. If I wrote these two letters for you, you can turn that slide projector off, the light off, Joe. AB, capital A, capital B. What does that say? Well, AB is a preposition in the English language, means away, down, you know, abdicate, all of those words. Hebrew has something to do with father, Abba, Abba. You say, okay. But now let's play a little game here. If I was an Egyptologist and saw that on the wall, see, I'd say, Ab, must mean something. I'm going to play a little game and decide some things arbitrarily. I'm going to decide that this leg of the A represents a man, or a husband, or a father, or a patriarch, or somebody like that. That this part of the A represents a shelter. That's a house, or a teepee, or a barn, or a shelter. That this part represents a beast of burden of some sort. And so this is a figure representing a horse or an ox or something like that. Okay? I'm going to decide that this represents a plow. And I'm going to decide that this represents grain. And I'm going to decide that this, lying straight up and down, means the act of growing grain or cultivating. Now I want you to tell me what these two letters mean. Something to do with a man who goes into his barn, does something in the barn. He's got a horse. He must hook a plow to the horse. He goes out in the field. He plows his field. He plants some grain, and it's apparently growing. That's how the Egyptian alphabet and grammar relates to the characters in the book of Abraham. Now, what if I say this? I want you to add enough, quote, qualifying adjectives. This is on the first page of your handout under Zai, Chi, On, Hiash. Enough, quote, verbs, participles, prepositions, conjunctions, and adverbs as there are connecting parts in these two letters. And since there are five connecting parts, let's say this is going to end up in the fifth degree. So you have to have five adverbs, five prepositions, five participles, five adjectives. And I'm quoting out of the Alphabet and Grammar, page one. If you've got this subject must be continued until five times the number of connecting parts of speech are used, or the full sense of the writer is not conveyed. That's quoting right out of the Alphabet and Grammar. That's exactly what happens in the book of Abraham. You'll have five ands, five ors, five connecting parts of speech until, and so you just keep explaining it until you get the right numbers of parts of speech. Well, I think that's the very principle employed in creating the book of Abraham. I got one parting shot here, and that is that the critics have always compared the Sen-Sen papyrus of the Book of Breathings to the Book of Abraham and said there's no relationship whatsoever. The problem is they're comparing the Book of Abraham in the second part of the fifth degree with the Sen-Sen papyrus. And I challenge all those critics to reduce the Book of Abraham to the first part of the first degree and then make the comparison. And I think they're just going to be utterly amazed at what they find. Thank you.
Brother Philip called me and asked if I would respond to his paper. I was, of course, first flattered and then curious as to why he would ask me. I think it's because I demonstrated some enthusiasm when he was sharing his discoveries with me. He has been discouraged by other individuals who said, almost as if to dismiss all of his work, well, when you can take your principles and translate more of the Book of Abraham, new material, then we'll know that you're on the right track. I find that to be an invalid test. What excites me about his work is that we have the opportunity, in a very small degree and very tentatively, of looking over the shoulder of Joseph and the brethren as they struggle over this material. If I could be forgiven a personal note, going back to my days in high school, I'd done a project in seminary with some Egyptian stuff. Invited me into his office privately, and then with the air of a man displaying his greatest treasure, showed me a copy that he had just acquired of the Egyptian alphabet and grammar. I'd never even heard of this before. This is my first exposure. And in looking at the dates, I realized he was making use of the Tanner's recent publication of that. He had the idea that with this in his possession, he was now qualified to translate Egyptian. I remember at that very moment being both attracted to the alphabet and grammar and repelled. And as the years have gone by, I found that that's been the reaction of the church in general. We would like to look at it if it confirms our preconception that Joseph Smith was an inspired prophet of God and that he came up with a translation in a way that we can understand. We are repelled when we find out that it's absurd, that the names sound as though they're contrived, the technique looks like something out of Athanasius Kircher or Haropalon. It just makes no sense. It's ridiculous on the face of it. And it's this love-hate relationship that I think has prevented adequate scholarship from being done on the subject. So my response to Brother Fillerup's presentation is that what remains to be done? Everything. It seems as though he's done an awful lot of work. But when you look at what has to be done, for example, just the details of putting them back into their original order, I'm sure you got a sense listening to him of how confused it is right now. No one has even made a stab at doing that except Brother Fillerup. This has to be done first before we can start trying to make sense of who and when they were involved in the actual production of this material. If we can take anything away from this discussion, it's that a lot more work has to be done on it. But it's going to be worth it. Brother Fillerup has demonstrated his greatest contribution, I think, is letting the documents speak for themselves. You may disagree because you've taken some courses in Middle Egyptian like I did because it doesn't seem to fit in with what you've been taught. But that doesn't make any difference. The principle underlying this seems to be that the Lord is able to accomplish his strange act using techniques that make very little sense to us. And if he has preserved these documents, I think it behooves us to look at them and let them speak for themselves.
You have 7 minutes for questions, so any questions? Well, it's just in the original. Oh, where does the idea, the question is where, thank you. The question is, where does the idea of the different degrees come from? It simply comes out of these original manuscripts of the Egyptian papers. Why they're in there, I'm not exactly sure. I've got some speculation, but it's pretty unfounded. And so it looks to me like there's, well, there are several possibilities. One is you need to look at these, and that's the last conclusion I made, is maybe there are several ways you need to look at the Egyptian. And that is, there may be the mundane secular level, which may be the first degree. Then you may progress to some sort of governmental level. Then you may progress maybe to, I guess I can say this in here, a sexual level, and then perhaps an astronomical level. And so if you want to know all about the astronomy, you look at this in the fifth degree, or the second part of the fifth degree, for example. I'm trying to pursue that, and there's some consistencies and inconsistencies in that theory, but it may hold up. Question? Question is, how can I explain, or how do I explain that the Rosetta Stone and the dictionaries and the grammars don't connect at all? And the answer is, I don't explain that, because I haven't approached this at all from an Egyptian point of view. I'm simply trying to explain how I believe we got the Book of Abraham. I don't know where the definition for zipzi, iota toi zipzi came from. I don't know where. I believe Joseph Smith is the one who got the definition, the basic definition in the first place. There's no evidence internally. I mean, he could have created those out of whole cloth, or he could have had them revealed to him, or he could have studied out. I don't know where he got the definitions. All I know is that if you take the definitions that are in the alphabet and grammar and apply them to the characters that appear in the margins of the manuscripts of the Book of Abraham, you get the basic phraseology of the same verse in the Book of Abraham. Yeah, that's a possibility. I have no question. The question, by the way, for the tape recording is that, do I dare repeat that question? Had to do with the comment that it possibly related to shorthand, Taylor shorthand. One response is these documents were produced in Kirtland in 1835, not in Palmyra or Manchester in 1820s. And so even though that book may have been in the library, I'm not sure that's relevant. But it is some sort of shorthand system, no question, that you dissect these characters, and out of the dissection, you get various definitions, and then when you see that piece of that character in the next one, you supply that meaning. And that's simply the way it appears to me to be. Yes? I restate that question? Let's see here. Maybe by filling just in the answer, I can restate the question. As you look at these various degrees, they are related. In other words, anything in the first degree is clearly related to the fifth degree. For example, one good example are the definitions of kolob. In the first degree, it's a very simple definition. By the time you get to kolob in the fifth degree, it's the exact wording that we have in facsimile number two. And so as you walk through these degrees, you see it's a process of expanding and enlarging the meaning from one degree to another. They're not totally unrelated from degree to degree. Let me just read you kolob in the first degree. It signifies the first great grand governing fixed star, which is the farthest that has ever been discovered by the fathers, which was discovered by Methuselah and also by Abraham. You don't happen to have that in your book of Abraham, that kolob was discovered by Methuselah. That's kolob in the first degree. By the time you get to the fifth degree, you have that big long explanation that appears next to facsimile number two. So there's some process as you go through the degrees of expanding and enlarging and encompassing more and more information for this character. I really can't respond to your long comment in, you know, very well right now, because it just raises so many issues. There's lots of Hebrew-sounding words. As an aside, Joseph, there's no historical evidence that Joseph ever studied one lick of Hebrew prior to November of 1835. There's some circumstantial evidence, but he got his first Hebrew lexicon and grammar and his first Greek grammar in November of 1835, and he apparently started studying Hebrew not to prepare the Book of Abraham, but in my opinion, as a result of his study of this. He realized he should know Hebrew and know Greek, and so he began to study those in November and December. And by January of 1836, he's teaching some of the Hebrew courses in Nauvoo, in Kirtland. Question?